extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Extra Time presented by AT&T 5G. I am David Goss. No partners in soccer today because I'm running the show with a squad. We've got Michael LaHood in the house. We've got Charlie Davies in the house. We've got a little bit of scoops with big Tommy Bogert. We've got kits on everyone except Tom. Tom, what? You forgot the memo?
Do you not like my Grateful Dead dogs soccer dog park shirt?
To be honest, my connection is so bad, I literally can't even see it. So I will say I like it.
You're insulting my girlfriend, Dave. Thank you.
I like everything that everyone's going with. Although, Charlie, I have to admit, I can probably go back and find the clips of you ripping Vancouver, and now they're champions, and you're looking clean in that jersey. I'm not going to lie.
I feel clean in this jersey. And this Vancouver team has heart, and it's led by their coach. I mean, when you look at how this group just came together to get the job done against the favorites, which were Toronto FC, and having these big names, you have to love it.
Also one of the best jerseys in the league.
Listen, I agree with all of you. I've got like four of them. I've got a Kendall Waston
Vancouver
jersey sitting in the closet.
Oh, I got a Kendall Waston well. Jamaica one right here. Let's go.
You mean Costa Rica?
Yeah. His twin brother. Yeah. his doppelganger. Oh, yeah.
His twin,
for Jamaica.
It really
twin
is brother, Javon Watson.
Oh, Javon. One of the most
Javon Watson. That's who I thought
Javon
you were going to say.
Watson. Right now in Jamaica. I am looking forward to this show. Charlie's got a Vancouver jersey on because they are Canadian champions. Michael LaHood has a Sacramento Republic jersey on because they are the champions of all of our hearts right now as the cup sets continue and we are headed to the U.S. Open Cup final coming up, Orlando City versus Sacramento. It was a week of cups. So we're going to talk about all of that here in the AT&T 5G virtual studios on this show. Plus, is Jozy Altidore going to Liga MX? Is it finally going to happen after we made up fake rumors for about 2.5 years? Is David Ochoa headed to DC United, so much more, plus some weekend preview. Could my guys, Gareth Bale, get his first start for LAFC? To be clear, as much as I love LAFC, I'd wear anything that's black in this heat because I will be dying as we go along. Let's dig into it. The U.S. Open Cup, Wednesday night, doubleheader. We started in Orlando, but we're going to start in Sacramento. What a moment. Sacramento Republic, the sellout, the atmosphere, and then Roro Lopez, their first signing in 2013, played for them in 2014, has left the club, come back, left again, come back. And at 35 years old, he scores the penalty kick to get the win for Sacramento. Michael, you're in the kit. You know how it feels to be a USL side against MLS sides. Sacramento has done it 3 times now. What did you make of what last night was?
The Cinderella story continues, and it's off the back of Rodrigo Lopez. This guy brings a ton of experience, and whenever you are going to make a cup run, you need guys who have been there and done that in different leagues. He's done that in USL, and you need coaches who have the ambition to go up against some of the biggest and baddest names in Major League Soccer. Let's take a step back and look at how they got here. They beat San Jose Earthquake during a turbulent time for the Earthquakes, changing managers, and now San Jose is looking to kickstart their season a bit more. They beat the LA Galaxy during a turbulent time for them, and they beat Sporting Kansas City in a match where Sporting KC did the ultimate MLS no-no, which is if you do not take your chances early on, you will get punished. At this point in U.S. Open Cup competition, the teams are good. Every team that's there deserves to be there, and this Sacramento team is no pushover. Going back to USL play, because I got to go back to the last league I played in before ending my career, going back to USL play, they have a history of beating the top dogs. So they beat San Antonio FC, the last team I played for, 1-0. Since that game, San Antonio went on a tear. But they kind of pride themselves on going up against the Giants and getting the job done. And what I liked about it is they kept their composure. They grew in the game. Their goalkeeper had an outstanding game in the second half. Their back three, they play a 3-5-2 system. And the big moments calls for big players to step up. And Lopez did the business in the end.
It was a special night. The atmosphere was incredible. Charlie, as Michael said, KC sort of let Sacramento stay in it for a little bit. But Sacramento, I thought, played different than against the Galaxy. I thought they opened up more. Thought they had a ton of dangerous opportunities. It felt like they had the confidence the whole time that they knew, like, as big moments happened, they didn't get rattled, that their chance would be there at the end.
Well, first, shout out to Roro Lopez, my U.S. youth national team teammate. We won the Milk Cup.
Today. Oh, my God. Biggest youth tournament in the world.
Yeah.
Get out of here, Northern Ireland.
Yes, exactly. Me and Roro, we go way back. So I love to see him have success and now be in a final for U.S. Open Cup. And you're right. They took chances. They took risks. They opened themselves up. And so most of the chances that Sporting Kansas City had in the first half were just down to bad plays from Sacramento. Yeah. It was almost like a errant pass, and then that pass ends up at the feet of Johnny Russell, or, you know, it's a bad turnover, and next you know, Kyrie Shelton has a breakaway. Lahoud, you hit it perfectly. You have to finish. The expectation is Sacramento, they know they're playing Giants because they're a Major League Soccer team, and let's be real, SKC have some legit players. Like, Johnny Russell on his day can make chop suey on any Major League Soccer defender, right? He's that good when he's motivated, when he gets put in really areas to succeed. This was poor. This team looks lifeless. This Sporting Kansas City team, I'm watching, I'm like, where is the togetherness, that chemistry, and that kind of resilience when you know you're playing Sporting Kansas City? You're like, man, this is tough. They don't have that factor anymore. It was kind of like, this isn't the Sporting Kansas City I know. They've lost the DNA. And Sacramento, to their advantage, they go out and they try and win the game. They're making plays. You know, they had some chances where the ball's crossed in the box and the shot goes over. But you're like, hey, they're trying to play this game. They're going out fearless. I love that. And ultimately, to win on penalties, they deserve it. So I think when you're looking at Sporting Kansas City, where do you go from here? I know Tom was talking about it before we started recording. It's just, it's like beating a dead horse. This team is
to be clear, well said. To be clear, Charlie, I think you actually said that. You don't have to quote Tom.
Yeah, Tommy Scoops is getting words shoved down his mouth.
Yeah. You said phrase. It's like feeding a dead horse. But before we get to KC, I want to talk a little bit more about Sacramento, because this is what we all love, right? This is why we love cup competitions. This is why we've missed the Open Cup. Part of why we love CCL, right? The wild, the wacky, you never know what's going to happen. Michael Lahoud, as he said, Danny Vitiello in goal, phenomenal, from Massapequa, Long Island. No one's from New Jersey, Tom, so in your face on that one. But Tom, I've talked about this a little bit. I talked about it with Susanna Collins this morning on MLS Today. To me, one of the turning points in North American soccer was Sacramento becoming this USL team that, you know, could have a major stadium and pack it and be relevant in a big market. And we've seen so many follow. FC Cincinnati was one of them. Nashville was one of them. They've now moved to Major League Soccer. Orlando. But I feel like Sacramento was one of the first. And so to see them have that moment last night, to sell out that stadium and now go to a final, just felt really special to me.
Yeah, it really is kind of poetic that this is the team that's doing it. This is the team that's on the run. Like, they've long been, you know, like you said, going back to their first days, like, it was a really organic fan culture. It's been a consistently, like, great environment. It's a really great American soccer story. This is a team that was supposed to go to MLS. They had the expansion bid. I was there when it was kind of officially announced, when they finally got ownership to a point where they could move forward with the expansion. Obviously, it has since fallen through, but those fan cultures, the fan events, everything that kind of went within. I was there for like 36 hours. It was tough in terms of, you know, 10 or 12 hours on an airplane to be there for not that long. But everything that, like, we crammed in, it was really cool. It was so genuine. People at the club, people, the fans, like, there were so many Sacramento jerseys on this random, like, I think it was a Monday or a Tuesday evening. Like, it was so cool to watch. And they had that all taken away from them when investors kind of pulled out and they lost their expansion slot. So just to see them continuing to thrive like this, to see them continuing with these atmospheres, it hasn't hurt this local supporter culture. It hasn't hurt anything. It's really phenomenal to watch this be the team that's carrying USL Championship on their back throughout this really incredible US Open Cup run. But to kind of take it in a different direction, we've been talking for, what, 10, 11 minutes now? And we haven't mentioned the Panenka from Malik Foster that was followed by a back handspring, backflip or whatever it is. And then he did the sleep time, the Steph Curry celebration. And then he did finger guns. My man was ready for that moment. That was the best performance I've ever seen. Not just the Panenka, the 8 to 12 seconds that he crammed in three celebrations.
Yeah, that was special. When he did the night-night, well, first off, I was always kind of one of those players who had dreamed of doing the backflips and the front flips, and like, you just don't have it. So it's not even a possibility. It's not even, you can't even get that in your locker. And so when you watch it, you're like, wow, that's incredible. Done deal. Kiss it goodbye. But then you want to throw in the night-night, you want to throw in the fingers, you want to throw in all this. I'm like, hey, that just shows how much it means to him and to the club. Mm. And I'm all about it. All in. Love it.
What I love about that penalty kick and that celebration comes off of Felipe Hernandez, who he was John when he put his PK in, talking a little smack. And when you do that, you better make sure you're not giving locker room bulletin stuff to the opponent. And
they
I love
the locker room between penalties.
Yeah. They go to their mental locker room. But you don't get by that, you know what I mean, riling up your opponent. And what a reaction from Foster to say, you know what, Sacktown, the Bay Area and back down, Cali is where we put the smackdown. And he does it. And that, I'm telling you, that's on the LP label should Sacramento Republic win the U.S. Open Cup. I'm here for just this week. Hopefully come back later. I got more lyrics in the bag should they win. But a bigger talking point is look at what's happening at the top for the Sacramento Republic team. Todd Donovan, kudos to him for what he's built with Sacramento Republic. This is a guy that has won just about everything in Major League Soccer as a player, and now he's having success building this team, getting players from Spain, you know, getting players from the USL, from MLS. There's quite a few players who have Major League Soccer experience. Mm-hmm. They were young players when they did it, but now they're all gelling under a coach who's good with young players in Mark Briggs. He did it with Real Monarchs, winning USL Coach of the Year in 2017. Todd Donovan won the U.S. Open Cup with the LA Galaxy in 2005. You need to have winning experience from the top that then bleeds down to the bottom, and it creates belief. And you could see the belief, not just in the Panenka, but also in how this squad is put together, that, hey, if we play, whoever we play, wherever we play, we can win at home. We can now go on the road, and they will have a ton of confidence going on the road because they've done it before, but going on the road against a good Orlando City team in this competition.
Yeah, you're right. This was a team that was built for the moment. They're veteran, as you said. Douglas Martinez played in MLS, right? Up top. You've got Roro Lopez. You've got Matt LaGrassa, who was at Nashville. You've got Connor Donovan, who was at Orlando City. You've got Luis Felipe, who should still be at San Jose. And it was the biggest dunk of the year that he scored against them in Open Cup to knock them out. A ton of MLS experience, overseas experience as well. I'd argue with both of you. I don't think he was ready for that moment, by the way. Because three celebrations means he couldn't pick one. He was overexcited, and he just went with all of them. Charlie, that's why the stanky leg stands out, because you only did one. You didn't go knee slide, stanky leg, shirt over the head, right? You only get to do one. That's how I would celebrate a goal.
And you maximize it. You maximize the hell out of the stanky leg. And you know, it's a cool dance too. I mean, it involves your leg, which we use to play the sport, you nice. Know, and the little
good breakdown,
yeah, you know,
good breakdown.
You break it down. You know, so
it was the art behind it that I just never realized when I enjoyed you doing it all those years, especially at the Azteca. Now that I know the background, I'll go back and rewatch them and enjoy them more. A special night for Sacramento. I think a special night for all of us who love this sport and love this game, that the sport is growing, right? There are more opportunities for players, there are more opportunities for coaches and executives and all of that. And to be able to build something like Sacramento did and be rewarded here is really cool to see. It's going to be epic to see them in the final. Alistair Brewer sent us an email. He said, from a neutral perspective, Sacramento SKC US Open Cup game was amazing. Hats off to Sacramento. Also to Alan Chapman, was my man of the match. He put on a referee clinic for how to ref without VAR, got every call correct, even worked on players' cramps between calls. Book him now for the World Cup final. Charlie, I know you love to talk about refs, so I thought I'd throw that in there for you. Every player was cramping up at the end of this game. It was cramp after cramp after cramp, which shows you how much they put into this, how much it matters. Let's go to the other side. though, because for every winner, there is a loser. And right now, fairly consistently, it's been Sporting Kansas City. Tom, where does SKC go? What sort of your takeaway a few hours after now what we have highlighted as the main goal of their season being taken away in the Open Cup?
Yeah, I mean, just doesn't change my mind a ton about where this team is, because obviously they're bottom of the West. Not only that, they've played more games than everybody else in the Western Conference, I think, in the league. So, like, they're 10 points below the playoff line, and the teams at the playoff line have one, if not two, games in hand on them. So, like, it just is what it is. We know what this team is. It's unfortunate in another kind of track that this was something that they could, air quotes, salvage their season with. It's been really tough. They've been looking forward to this run, everything. This has been the real breath of positivity. We haven't even noticed necessarily a ton of their MLS results recently, because it was Open Cup semifinal against Sacramento Republic. Like, Open Cup semifinal, they have a chance to win a trophy. They can still make the season really meaningful no matter what. I don't feel necessarily different, just because two penalties were different and they got through, we'd probably be celebrating them and like, wow, they fought through adversity. Yeah, sure. Like, they should have won in regulation or extra time. They kind of got, you know, we could have said you got lucky in penalties, but like, they're into the final. It's such thin margins, but overall, it just is what it is with this team. I don't have anything new. What Charlie was saying at the beginning, before the show, about beating a dead horse is that I wish that I'm rambling too much to just be saying the same things I've been saying on the show, everybody else has been saying on the show for 3 months now.
I will say this. I agree with you. I think Eric Tommy and William Agata have shown some. I think Eric Tommy, obviously, more and more minutes. Probably too little too late for Open Cup. There was no connection. He doesn't know those players very well. Is it enough? Unsure for them moving forward. It'll be interesting to see how they rebound from this. Does maybe the mental weight of this coming off let them play free in the league? Or do you start to see a team that has nothing to play for coming down the stretch? Obviously, we know Peter Vermees is as safe in his role as anyone in Major League Soccer, because he's the guy who decides the person in his role at two levels. And he's a legend. He is the longest tenured coach in MLS. He's won trophies. He has created the expectations that SKC can't live up to. And that carries a lot of weight. And I think it will continue through this season into next season. Let's go back out east, though, to our opening game. Orlando City, an annihilation of the New York Red Bulls at home. We are going to Disney World, baby. That's what you get after you win the Super Bowl or you win an Open Cup semifinal. Extra time is going to go on the road. We're going to be at the Open Cup final September 7th at Exploria Stadium. We'll let you know as we get all our details around what we're going to do around that game. A huge moment for Orlando City. And Charlie, I look at this game like I look at their season. Ups and downs all year. Every time we're sold, they lose 5-3 at home to DC. Then you're sold again. Then they drop a home result again. And in this game, they went down 1-0, but they get the goal in the 44th minute. And from that moment on, they did something no one else has done, which is they blew the Red Bulls off the field offensively, and they get to their first final in their club's history.
And you have to be pumped. I mean, this team is just inconsistent. And I look at how they're set up to play. I think what really changed, I think the momentum for Orlando City is Mauricio Pereira. He's a player who is gifted. He has an engine, but not typically going to get you 10 goals with 10 assists. Just not that type of player. But in terms of winning the balls, winning second balls and getting off his feet and driving with the ball to break pressure at times, him coming now back in a deeper role in midfield, I think has helped this team tremendously. Now you bring on another attacker. They're still missing a nine. You know, Pato has played there, but he hasn't been healthy all the time. It looks like he's dropping deeper, not necessarily making all the runs in behind like he used to as a player when he excelled in Europe. So you have, in this game, you had Pato as the attacking midfield. Facundo Torres, he looked great in this match for large portions of the match. And then Benji Michel, he's just constant motion, movement. He's one of those players. He's not going to be one who holds up the ball really well or beats you on the dribble or turns, but because of all of his motions and actions and runs, he causes problems. He causes players to come out of position. He stretches the field, gives a little bit more room underneath. So this is a team that I think now they have a lot to look forward to. They can win a trophy, and they're going to be heavily favored at home against the Sacramento team. But this could be that turning point for this group, because they have really underwhelmed throughout this first half of the season. So we've always seen them with success with Gallese in goal, can make incredible saves. Moutinho, when he gets involved, creates havoc down the left side. Juan, the same thing on the right side. And then Antonio Carlos and Robin Johnson had made a great partnership, and there's an understanding between how they play and learning each other's strengths and covering their weaknesses. So I really have liked that back four with Gallese in the back, and now it looks like everything's starting to develop up top for them. But goal scoring has been the issue, and I think they still need to fulfill that nine ever since they let Daryl Dike go overseas.
But where's the like? It's got to be internal. They just signed Nico Giacchini, and Eric Sankara is a DP. Facundo Torres, the club record signing on the winger. He's supposed to be somebody who does add goals and assists. Like they need to figure out number nine, as you're saying. There isn't a lot of flexibility over this last week of the transfer window for them to do something else. Like Giacchini was kind of the big swing because they wanted to get another option and more out of kind of who we're not sure if he's going to necessarily be an every game starter. If he wins that job, then good for him. That means he's performing well. But if he's not, then they wanted to get more production out of kind of the second group or the rotation group. So I think that this is just has to come from within.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Giacchini will eventually be starting on the right side. I mean, Junior Urso was there for this match, and Junior Urso is, we know he's like a grinder. You know, he's an eight. You could say he's a six, but he's definitely not a 10, and he's definitely not an attacking winger or outside midfielder. So I think Joaquini will ideally be on the right side, and he gets up and down. He is an attacker, has played as a second forward. So I think ultimately you get some production from him, but at the nine, I don't think you have an answer yet. I know someone has to rise to the occasion and perform week in and week out, but I don't think we've necessarily seen that yet. So it's still up for grabs.
I'd be really interested for us to change the tune a little bit. Let's look at how this Orlando City team is doing it in this Open Cup. In their Open Cup run, there's only been one game where they took the lead. They've had to come back in just about every match. You don't do that. An Open Cup situation. Maybe you do that maybe one game, and typically in the semifinals, that's where it's tricky, especially when you're the home team. You know you're going to have to grind. Two penalty kick shootouts. They're starting to have resolve about them, and this is a team that the expectations, because they got Facundo Torres, because they have Pato, that it takes time for these players to gel, and the Open Cup can be a catalyst for players, attacking players, to find form and to really gain confidence in Major League Soccer. This is a team that sits fifth place in MLS while still pursuing an Open Cup final that they're going to host. And I'd be reticent to really slam them that much just yet, because they've gotten to a final. It hasn't been pretty, but the resolve and the heart and the togetherness they showed against the Red Bull, because you need that to go against a Red Bull team that was together, that was coming off a big result at Austin against Austin FC, that have youth in their ranks, to do it in the style Orlando City did, four different goal scorers. I think that this can be the springboard for their season. But I could say that in Sacramento, like I said, they could put the smack down, and I'm having to come up with a new rap album. So we'll see.
For either of these teams, if they win U.S. Open Cup, it was a successful season, right? It will be the first Open Cup for USL. Or a Division II team since 2001. On the other side, for Orlando, will be their first ever trophy. It's not their first final, by the way. I said that incorrectly. They were in, of course, the MLS is back final, which they didn't win. And
MLS is back, erasure.
Yeah, of course. I spoke with Tesho Akindele on MLS Today earlier today. You can go listen to that show. Search MLS Today on Spotify, any of your podcast apps. And he brought it up and said, we've always felt like we had some unfinished business when we made it to that final, that we thought we could go that extra step. And obviously this is a huge opportunity to do that. As you said, Michael, it would make their season. It would be massive. If not, it'll be a pretty upsetting finish for what happened. I also look at that togetherness and I say, this is a team that got blown out by the Red Bulls 3-0 earlier this season. And I felt going into it that Red Bulls were heavy favorites. And so to have the composure to come back from that, to come into this game, to come back from the weekend, which was an upsetting result once again. And then Cesar Araujo gets the goal right after Lewis Morgan scores. And Tesho said it, and I think we all feel it, that that was the biggest moment of the game. Because he said Oscar Pereja didn't even really have to say anything at halftime. Like, that was the message, was the energy we had going into the halftime locker room off that goal. That was his first professional soccer goal, and he scored two in this game, including that one. Talk about young players showing up for the big moment, and that's sort of, as you've said, Schlegel scores against Nashville. Like, it's been odd characters, but it's been, there's a clear lack of belief in a lot of the players and this team in general, even when things haven't gone their way. You guys are all going to stare at me and just acknowledge me on that one.
No,
which is fair.
No, one thing that was Cesar Rao, I don't think that we've made enough about, like, how good of a signing that's been with the U22 initiative. These signings aren't always, they're kind of hit or miss, or they're definitely not always supposed to be ready for the first team, particularly at a position like that either. And he came in and he kind of, again, Jackson Mendez is someone with 30 caps with Ecuador, and he was on the bench all season. Like, Andres Pereja was, I thought, a really strong signing and a strong performer over the last year or two, however long he's been in Orlando. He's on the bench too. Junior Urso is playing right wing at times. That helps kind of Cesar Rao get on the field. Like, he's been a really good player, and I wish that I wasn't talking about him just because he scored two goals, because that's not his game, as you said. Literally the first two goals of his professional career. But again, that's been a really, really good use of the U22 initiative.
Let's take a look on the other side. We know it's going to be amazing for Orlando City, but for Red Bulls, another cup competition, another loss. They have never won MLS Cup or US Open Cup. They did win the Emirates Cup, so take away the whole they don't win cups thing. But Michael, again, you said it. Huge win on the weekend. They rotated their squad. So, yes, they had to travel. They were on shorter rest. They rotated most of the team. They've been dominant on the road across MLS so far this season, almost borderline record-breaking. What do you make of what happened to them to lose this heavily in such a big game?
I think of some of the players that stood out in that 4-3 just crazy entertaining win against Austin FC, and one of them in particular, and I know our very own Matt Doyle is going to be happy about this, smiling cheek to cheek, Drew Yearwood. I think he would have been a better matchup for Orlando City than Frankie Amaya, and we all know how I feel about Frankie. The curious case of Frankie Amaya finally solved with being at the New York Red Bulls, but I think Drew Yearwood, the confident display, the commanding display, the dynamic nature of how he plays, his ability to cover ground. I thought Orlando, what they did well was they only left Benji Michel high, and then they really packed it in there in the middle of the park. And Caceres and Amaya, it was just too much ground to cover. They're chasing shadows for a majority of that game. And this is a Red Bull team that they live off the press, whether it's in the mid block or high press, as we've seen. And Orlando started figuring it out of hitting long balls up to Pato, and he can hold the ball up. He's gotten bigger in his frame, and he's strong. He can hold the ball up, and Michel can hold the ball up. Very tenacious attacker, whether he's playing out wide or up top. And I think just bypassing that second or first, second, sometimes third line of pressure, I think Red Bulls were scrambling, and they didn't really have a plan B. And I think this was a game where I wonder how a Sergin Gomez, a player like that, young player who you can bring off the bench. We've seen how he lit it up against Atlanta United when Red Bulls needed a player to step up. I think some of their young players who maybe some of the rotational guys, they just were exhausted. And I think the emotional highs of getting a result like they did against Austin FC, they just couldn't sustain it after about 60 minutes in this game, and I think it cost them overall.
It's going to be a lot for Red Bulls to grapple with now. I thought they were one of the teams, you know, I felt firmly top three in the East, probably in that five-team conversation as MLS Cup favorites, potential at this point of the season. I think a lot of that shifts now after seeing them once again stumble in a single-game knockout competition. Before we move on to the Canadian Championship, Tom, we've got plenty of time to preview the game. Give me an idea in your mind what a final at Exploria Stadium will look like for Orlando.
When that place is kind of big games, big atmospheres, when the team's good, that atmosphere is really strong. I'm really looking forward to what that's going to look like. I love the idea, too, that, again, shout out to this team for being the first MLS team to have a safe standing supporter stand that has since come to LAFC, Cincinnati, Red Bulls. I'm sure I'm missing some others off the top of my head there, but awesome. It all started with Orlando in terms of safe standing. Columbus, all these, Is that it? this is, again, I love that. I think that it really adds to the atmosphere. It'll be a hot one. It'll be BMO. A fun one. Again.
Charlie,
you want the ball here? Take the ice out.
Yeah, Charlie, what do you think the atmosphere will be like? To be clear, it will be amazing, as Tom said. That building bounces. I think, what, they were undefeated in their first, like, 10 ever games there, just on pure vibes alone back in the day. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be fun. Sacramento, that's a great story. Evan Ream already texted me. He knows like 50 people have already booked flights and are headed down for the final. So they're going to have a massive section as well. It'll be a lot. This is, by the way, my dream. My favorite color is purple and maroon. It's literally maroon versus purple. This is my final. I need to be the only one. I might go split jersey like the mom.
God, so I was going to say, so whoever wins, is that going to be your absolute favorite color? Or no more like these two are my favorite colors?
Because... purple is my favorite color, but maroon is more of a dress up, right? Like my
classic MLS guy. Taking the Orlando, the
maroon,
MLS team.
The maroon
shield.
Suede jacket. I got it.
Thank you, Chuck.
And a turtleneck. I can see it now.
All day.
If you want to grill me more about this, you can do it in person at Exploria Stadium and around in
or
Orlando.
Disney.
Yeah, around the Open Cup final. Charlie will be in Epcot the entire time, not going to leave. He's eating every meal at Epcot. He's just going to live there.
So hyped.
I will probably be out, you know, in Winter Park, hitting up my Turkish restaurants, hanging out, maybe an Argentine steakhouse or Chascaria. But I'm a cultured person. Charlie's just Disney all the time. But we will be there. We will have more details as it comes a little bit closer, what we're going to be doing, where we'll be. But I am so excited for this one. This is it's going to be special and it's going to be unique. Speaking of special, let's go to Canada, baby. Let's go to Charlie's own hometown, Vancouver, British Columbia. And let's start with an email from Fraser Cave, who says to the extra time pundits who support teams that haven't clinched trophies and Champions League berths yet. Okay, that's a bit unfair. You'll have to excuse me for laying it on thick. The Caps don't lift a lot of trophies. I'm in a post-win euphoria. The U.S. Open Cup final has a lot to live up to after that Canadian championship. Great atmosphere with a sellout crowd. Two beautiful goals coming from unbelievable crosses and a penalty shootout finish. Caps finally getting over the hump and winning it. And Vanni Sartini with the roll and tarp off Selly. What more could you want out of a championship? He then has two questions. One, what effect do you think this will have on the rest of Vancouver's season? Will it invigorate them? Two, where does Vanni Sartini rank in all-time MLS coach personalities? The guy seems like he has more fun out there than anyone. It is great to watch. Penalty kick shootout. Let's go into the big topic. Let's talk Vanni Sartini. Someone give me a ranking here. Where is he all-time already in just 1 year in MLS coaching personalities?
Oh, I'm not going to lie. He's up. He's in the upper half. But you got to think about some of these personalities that we've had on the sidelines. I mean, from Walter Zenga to Thomas Rongen to, man.
Chalice.
Thank you. I keep waiting.
I got you, Michael.
Jeez, everyone's stealing my stuff.
I was going to say, poor Michael, man, again.
Michael, you got to jump in.
I know, but it's Charlie's moment. It's Charlie.
You go ahead. No, I love when people jump in. So throw some names in. I know Red Bulls have probably had some crazy managers over the years.
You're pointing at Tom when you say that? Because you did.
Yeah,
like,
what is this for?
Jersey boy.
Jersey boy. Michael, did you play for Chalice?
No, I just missed out on the fun that was Chalice. But I heard lots of hilarious stories. I'm trying to think.
Boom, boom, Chalice. I think
Boom, Chalice. So the biggest personality I've seen in the last probably decade in Major League Soccer, I would say Chalice. He is unapologetically who he is.
Absurd.
And there's nothing you can do about it. And I thought for the time he came to Chivas USA, I thought he was the right person who could withstand everything that was happening in Chivas USA. But Vanny, I'm going to go back to something that I said last show, and we were giving TFC all the praise, rightfully so, after a 4-0 win. But I said, guys, we have to consider the Vanny factor. And Tommy, I want to ask you, what's the XG now on the Vanny factor? Because you can't bet against this guy in big games now. It's a year and a half in. And this guy is just doing wonders in Vancouver.
It's so much fun. And so the historical talk here is probably too big for me right now. But looking at the current managers, Vandy's got to be top of the power rankings in MLS managers you want to have dinner with, right? Like, how much fun would that be?
He okay, so let me give the full breakdown. Obviously, they win the game, which is amazing. He then does a somersault into a knee slide. He pulls off his shirt. He then goes down after the trophy lift and leads the song in singing Stand By Me, which has become their song with their fan base, which they started, whatever. Then it comes out after the game. One, I think he said into someone's phone, I'm the best Italian signing. And then there was rumors about what happened with him and Bob Bradley. Turns out they're boys, which I love, by the way, because I feel like Bob would be like, this Vanny guy gets it. He loves football. He's a fan. Exactly. And then apparently he told Insigne and Bernadeschi something in Italian, like, sometimes you lose. Get over it. He's loving life. He is everywhere that he needs to be. And as Michael said, you go into a game up 1-0 when Vanni Sartini is on the sideline. That's the XG locked in. And I know we're kidding, and I know it's fun, but I do want to say I thought the game plan was perfect for them. So let's talk about the game a little bit. They take the 1-0 lead off the set piece. But Michael, they sat deep. They hit in transition. Their lines were clean. It feels like even only seeing Insigne and Bernadeschi once, they understood their best chance to win that game, and they played it to perfection.
This is a TFC back line that is still searching for itself, that just because you get imports on the offensive end, you still have to address certain things. But I'm going to focus more on the fact that this is a Vancouver team that is comfortable without the ball. Given this turnaround that we've seen, they were one of the hottest teams in Major League Soccer back in May, June. They really turned it around, and it was because of a arrival of Kubas. I think he's added a different dimension. He allows him to be more ball playing, and he's really the one driving some of those counterattacks. They have the speedy players. They have the players who can hold it up, and Cavallini and Brian White starting to get back in form. Ryan Gault, and they're doing with Dahomey playing as a wing back, and Caicedo, he really hasn't featured as much, and those two were two of their leading goal scorers last season. They know who they are under Vanny, and Vanny is making no mistake about it. They're a counterattack team first, and they're a team that once they get that goal in the first half, and the fact that you have a character like Cavallini, you need characters like that who thrive off going up against the big players and big teams and getting a result. He's going to be the guy who's not afraid to kick someone. He'll definitely get kicked, but he'll actually be the enforcer and kick someone and get a yellow card and let you know you're in for a tough game in a cup final.
But before you go into any more, you loved being on teams that just didn't love the ball. They were comfortable out of possession, huh?
Oh, loved it. Loved it. Hey, like, you take this thing. Like, hot potato.
I can't tell you. Imagine if you're on a team and they're like, oh, this is a group that just, they love not having the ball. And you're just like, man, is that what we are? I know it sounds harsh, but yeah, I mean, Vancouver is just a team that knows how to defend, and they're fine with countering. I mean, a lot of teams, their weakness is possession. And it's not that they don't care about it. They just know our strengths are playing off the counter and trying to generate these turnovers and go straight to goal. I mean, New York Red Bulls is probably the best example of a team that is fine without having possession of the ball, but they know how to win games.
Charlie, I know you make fun of it, and I understand as a number nine, but also as a number nine, can you imagine playing underneath a guy like Lucas Cavallini, just knocking center backs over and getting service from Julian Gressel, Ryan Gauld, and Ryan Raposo? Because I really like the way this Vancouver team is coming together. Rumors are they're looking at another center mid. I do think they need another partner for Kubas to sort of upgrade the team. But Kubas is the best player on the field, right? And if it wasn't him, it was Ryan Gault. And that was in a game with Insigne and Bernadeschi. You've got young center backs. I thought this was Blackman's best performance of the season. And it feels like when you talk about Red Bulls, the thing that Red Bulls have been successful is having a unique system. So therefore they can bring in talent that fits them. And you're not competing with everyone else for the same types of players. It feels like this roster is starting to come together to fit the 3-5-2, to fit the direct style and out of possession play that Vanni Sartini wants. So in the question from Froster Cave like 5 hours ago, I do think that this is going to help Vancouver spur on and make a playoff run. I do think they're going to make it into the playoffs this year. And I think they're going to be fun in CCL next year. Like, they are set up to go on the road and hit and try and counter. It's an interesting group of Liga MX CCL teams. Atlas, Tigres, we already know locked in Leon as well, I believe. And I don't know, Vancouver could be frisky. They could be fun in there as well. Let's turn our attention, though, to the other side. Like we had to do with KC and Red Bulls, there's a losing team in these big games. And we look at Toronto FC. Tom, second game now for Bernadeschi and Insigne. But for you, I think coming out of this game, there was a different name that sort of was stuck in your head in terms of the result that Toronto got.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Bernadeschi looks really awesome. Like, that assist was just disgusting. Again, it's kind of wild that we haven't talked about that. And, like, we would have been leading with that if they won, and that's how it goes. Talk about the winner first. But anyway, it was really, really apparent very early in the game that this team was missing Marc-Anthony Kay extremely in the midfield. Like, again, Charlie was making jokes about Vancouver and playing against the ball. So Vancouver aren't, you know, the 65% possession team who are breaking everybody down. They were too easy to play through the midfield. It was just too easy anytime the Caps got in transition. They weren't enough, like, legs or, like, just look at the team. Noble Akello out. They don't have a backup center midfielder. Jaden Nelson's a winger, and he was playing in the middle with Michael Bradley and Jonathan Osorio because Marc-Anthony Kay is out. Marc-Anthony Kay, I think, is one of the best number eights in the league. So he's going to be a difficult miss no matter what. But just because of how thin this roster is, and that is a product of how much they had to get rid of players in the offseason, and they're still kind of holding budget charge for somebody like Kamar Lawrence and everything else that they've had to do to kind of use assets to get rid of contracts to be able to bring in other players. Right now, they really need another central midfielder if they're able to kind of find room, find some allocation money, find some salary cap relief in the couch cushion somewhere. Because if Michael Bradley, Jonathan Osorio, or Marc-Anthony Kay misses extended time, and again, I think Kay is extremely important to the balance of that group, they don't have a backup central midfielder right now, and that's going to be a problem.
Anders, you can check me on this. I think Insigne is 31. If not, he's 30 or 32. So I'm in the ballpark. He's not going to be here very long. Charlie is my main point. And I know they just got here, him and Bernadeschi, but this was a cup final. How big a loss, how big a failure is this for Toronto? And similar to the conversation around Red Bulls, oh, he turned 31 in June.
He's not going to be here long. What are we talking about? He just got here.
He's 31. How long is he going to be at his peaks? How long is he going to be the player that you brought in? And I think it's a legitimate question to say this was an opportunity missed, because also you cannot play in CCL next year. And then, we get down the road. We get into full Leagues Cup. We get into a different format. But, Charlie, this feels like a big deal, and it feels like it could affect Toronto for a while.
It is a big deal, because you get a chance to play in CONCACAF Champions League, and this team is trying to be set up to win a CONCACAF Champions League. That's why you sign players like Bernadeschi and Insigne, because you want to go after the CCL trophy, because not only do you want to win MLS Cup, you want to be one of those teams that's always competing. Yes, they've only been here for a short amount of time, but they were able to put four goals up and a half against Charlotte, and Charlotte is a better team than Vancouver. So I would say...
I disagree with that one. And two, they have one road win on the season, and not to take a stray at Charlotte FC, but like, I think we were a little bit too quick to anoint Toronto FC MLS Cup contenders because of one good half against Charlotte. I just want to see more is my point.
Yeah.
The stats is on fire.
I think everyone does, but they have the names. And you have one vintage performance from Michael Bradley, and everyone thought, okay, this is the TFC that... has been asleep, and now they've been kind of awoken from the slumber, and they're ready to dominate. For me, the back line is still below average. They are poor. Goalkeeping, poor. So unless you fix and address those issues, the team is still going to have the same problems. Yes, you can generate chances and score some goals, but in those tough matches, you're going to lose games because your defense cannot stand tall. And that has been the inconsistencies when you're looking at TFC. They we're seeing what happens when you bring in top players like Bernardeschi and Insigne. It's the combinations, it's the play, the possession. Michael Bradley looks like reinvigorated. He's making runs like it's a Michael Bradley in 2010, which is awesome to see. Mark Anthony Kay and Osorio, they're playing for they got a World Cup in front of them. There's all this excitement. But the back line is all over the place. And it's like, come on, guys. I know you see this. You have to fix your defensive problems first in order to really win and compete. So, you know, I think for TFC, they still have to figure out what they're going to do in the, you know, it's the spine. The heart of their team needs to be stronger in defensively.
Who would you bring in? Charlie Zambrata, Materazzi, Maldini, Nesta. I mean, there's always so many. I was thinking
Nesta. You know, he had a little time here in Montreal.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe they could bring him back, but no, they definitely need.
Yeah, you're right, Charlie.
Somebody.
I mean, Carlos Alcena was supposed to be that guy. Didn't work out on the field. Didn't work out off the field. They were able to get themselves out of it. They still have that opening. They have said yes or no if they're going to use it. Just to be clear, Vancouver Whitecaps, 26 points on 22 games played, plus 3 goal differential. Charlotte, 26 points, 22 games played, minus 6 goal differential. So just throwing that out there in case anyone was thinking about it and wondering. Michael, I do want to talk, though, about the Stars. And Charlie's right. It's not all of it. But as Tom said, Bernardeschi looks legit. 2 assists and a goal in 2 games. He seems like he's going to be a guy you have to tune in for every single week.
He's playing like a player who has a point to prove coming to Major League Soccer. I think the fact that this was a deal that wasn't highly marketed, highly talked about, it just kind of fell into place because a deal and a contract extension with Juventus, Juve seems to be handing everyone away, saying everyone, ciao, fuera, fuera, basura, ciao. If I hope that basura is Italian. That's my, you know, everyone in the Northeast. You can be in my inbox later.
I can tell you're from Virginia.
Charlie, don't out me, bro. Don't out me. We got an Italian community somewhere in Virginia. But, you know, geez, threw off my mojo. But with Bernardeschi, what I like about him is he's not your out-and-out winger who's just going to stay on the right-hand side. He's an inverted winger. He wants to get that ball on his left foot, and good things happen. It reminds me how he's playing. It reminds me of how he used to play at Fiorentina, where he had a lot of freedom to function as an attacking midfielder, almost a right-sided attacking midfielder, and come inside, play narrow, play off the center forward and Jimenez, come in to combine with Insigne. He's got total freedom to express himself, and I think that's when he's at his best. With Juventus, it was Ronaldo's world. It was Dybala's world. He was playing for other players. Now he really has a chance to be the main man, and he really looks up for it in Major League Soccer. For Toronto FC, when we talk about players that could fill in the back, it puts a lot of pressure on Henry, who's come in, Canadian international, to step up and solve all the problems. Henry will be highly motivated because he needs to make the World Cup squad. He's not a shoe-in, and hopefully he brings leadership to their back line because they're going to need a whole lot of it. The next two opponents they have in Major League Soccer coming off this result, Nashville and Portland, two teams who are very difficult and who are in form right now. Nashville, not as much as Portland, but we know Nashville has the resolve to make a run for a postseason run late on.
It is. It was a special night on Tuesday night. We'll see where these teams go from here, but we do, I think, have to continue to point out the 23,000 in the building, I think, was why. It gave the feel of a big game. It gave the feel of a final. They were behind the Whitecaps every time Vancouver had a spell with no possession. They won it back, galled breaks in transition. The crowd's on their feet, loud, pushing that team on. And then the penalty kick win was as exciting and as fun as it could possibly be. Shout out to Andres Kubas for doing his thing. My heart goes out to Jonathan Osorio. Huge fan of Oso. He's a big, big favorite of the show. Epic person. Loves Canada more than anyone else maybe in the world. He'll have his day, though. He's won a couple trophies. If a Montreal reporter asks him, he'll still say TFC has MLS Cup and then walk away. So he's still got that one to fall back on. Let's go into our news and notes now before we dig into the weekend's games. And we'll talk about one of Oso's former teammates. You talk about trying to make a World Cup team or whatever is going on. Josie Altidore, it has come out today, is headed to Mexico to sign a contract or a loan deal with Puebla of Liga MX. We have talked about Josie playing in Liga MX for 14 years on this show one day, and now it seems like it's finally going to happen. Charlie, you cover him day in and day out with the Revs. You obviously have played with him as well. What do you make of this news and what it will mean for Josie or how we sort of got here?
I'm not surprised, just because Josie Altidore hasn't gotten the minutes he hoped he would get. And I think all along the plan was, let's get Josie Altidore fit from the moment we sign him until the moment Adam Buksa departs. And when Adam Buksa departs, because that was always in the plans to sell Adam Buksa this summer, that Josie Altidore will be the fill-in, that we don't need to go out and spend all this money to sign a DP. And maybe we have flexibility to put that DP somewhere else in the squad. However, that just never materialized because Adam Buksa was sold and Josie never gave this coaching staff the belief that he could be the guy that they rely on. And so you look at it from two sides. One, the player side, which is, I didn't get enough opportunity. I didn't get enough chances. And then from the coach's side, you said, well, I gave you chances. I gave you time and you didn't take it. Josie Altidore had 589 minutes, just four starts and one goal to show. 14 shots and only two were on goal. If you're looking at it by the numbers, you'd say, you had time and you had to earn more minutes. You had to earn starts. Nothing's going to be handed to you. And so that can be different from a player who's coming from a different stratosphere and then coming down. You used to be the DP, the big name, starting on the national team. You've played World Cups, and all of a sudden, now you're a guy who has to earn everything back. You have to fight for it. And that transition can be quite humbling. And it's scary for a lot of guys. It can also be one of those things where you look at it and you're like, I don't have to do that. I've already proven myself.
Yeah.
But realistically, it comes for everybody at some point where you are expected to prove yourself every single day in training, in matches. And you could be 32 to 35 years old and you're like, man, I think we all look at Gonzalo Higuain. Did anyone ever think he would have to prove himself again? That he would have to fight and earn his time, and you have to show it. You have to show the commitment. He's done it. You're watching him play. Now he's playing and you could see fight. He wasn't playing in the same manner 5 months ago. I can promise you that. You see a little more grit to him, a little more desire. That's what they were hoping they would see from Josie. I just don't think we saw enough of it. And then Josie, from his perspective, is like, hey, this is my one last, absolute last chance to claim a spot on the plane for a World Cup spot. Because let's be honest, how many number nines have done it? How many number nines are doing it currently?
Oh, man.
One?
We're still...
Jesus Ferreira. Yeah. That's it. We're still talking about that. And Jesus Ferreira, he's balling. No one can take that away from him. My man is balling. Is he unproven on the international stage? Yes, but he's balling. You all have to get proven on that stage at some point. And if it's got to be the World Cup for Jesus Ferreira, let's go. But I think for Josie, he's making this move to Puebla to say, let me give myself one last chance. This is my last chance to score some goals and try and get on the plane to play in a World Cup.
Yeah, as I was reporting this out a little bit, Fabrizio Romano first reported it, and I was able to get it confirmed and kind of talking to sources about it. It was, and I think Bruce Arena has since come out and even said all this, but like Josie initiated this. Josie wanted regular playing time. It was kind of a no-brainer for both sides, given, as you said, Charlie, he wasn't playing, and he wants to be playing. He wants to have, all right, if I can go to Puebla, or, you know, San Lorenzo was a team in Argentina that were trying to sign him as well. There were some talks. I can go to Puebla. If I can start every game, I'm playing regularly. If I score goals, I have a chance to go to Qatar. He hasn't given up on that as a possible dream, as a possibility. So that was the impetus behind Josie and why Josie is kind of wanted this move. And then for the Revs, I believe you get all of the salary cap relief or whatever it is prorated from now to the end of the season because he's on loan. I don't have that 100% sure because sometimes the roster rules, I get cautious because it feels like things either change or they're very difficult. But they definitely get the roster spot back. So that should help. There's a week left in the transfer window. Maybe they'll get something else done. But yeah,
that's big if they do get somebody because they could use it. And then You brought in a DP, Giacomo Vrioni.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You have Gustavo Bo. Those are two DP strikers. They're always going to play. Once they announced the signing of Vrioni, you knew Josie's numbers were over. It was done. It was time
but
to move on.
If Josie had performed while Buxa was out injured and Bo was out injured, and after Buxa left, you would assume the Vrioni signing would have been, hey, man, we sort of want you to get comfortable this year, and then next year is your year, right? And Josie would have been the run to MLS Cup, which is what we all thought. And I think we should all say the move still makes sense from both sides, like at the start. The Revs and I think Josie both made the right decision. It just doesn't always work out, and unfortunate for that. But Josie is going to be a megawatt star. The USMNT, one of the top five scorers in USMNT history, who's fluent in Spanish, going down to Mexico to play in Liga MX, going into a World Cup. Like, I have 2DNA on right now because I just want to see all of it the whole time. I am pumped about this.
I'm curious, out of you three, how many goals does Josie score with this move, and how many goals does it take for him to get on that plane?
I think Josie scores 8, and it's not enough.
Okay.
I don't think he gets on the plane. I think he'll score goals.
How many goals do you think it would take for him to get on that plane?
Yeah, I think Anders put the high end at 15. I think that's the floor. I think he needs to hit 15.
I think 15. That is the number I had in my head. 15 goals in Liga MX gets you on the plane, gets you in the conversation. And if you then get on that plane and start performing in some of those tune-up matches, then the miraculous happens, the turnaround happens. We've seen it happen before, not so much in Liga MX, but MLS players getting hot at the right time before a World Cup, 2010. Mm-hmm. What, Finley made it, Buttle. Edson Buttle. I mean, those Herc two. And that,
yeah.
Gomez, yeah, Herc. And so it's, look, if your ambition, and what I like about this is different. For a player who is once a DP to still have that fire, to still have that ambition of saying, hey, you know what, this is my goal and I want to make a move to make it happen. And I'm actually going to test myself in a league that is very competitive and say, get on him for that. Now the real work begins, as you said, Charlie, of go do the work. Prove every single person, whether it be at New England or around the league, wrong, and get on that plane. And, you know, it'll only help the U.S. national team to have a good Josie.
And I think that'd be an awesome story. I think we were all rooting for that in New England as well. But I just want to cautiously point out that he hasn't played 800 minutes in a league season for 4 years. He's played more than 1,000 minutes in a league season once in the last 5 years. So it's kind of more of a wait and see for me here. But I hope that things kind of turn out well. It'd be really cool to have an American soccer legend playing well in Mexico. I'm not DeMarcus Beasley is probably the last one off the top of my head I can think of. So let's see how it goes.
It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. Let's keep rolling on with another player who also needs to prove themselves on the field. Less of a resume. David Ochoa, Steve Goff, I think, putting out that he is heading in a trade from RSL to DC United. The understanding that I have, at least, is that his contract is up at the end of this year. So yes. DC United gets him for probably a small amount of allocation money, and then a lot of it contingent on does he resign, performances, appearances, stuff like that. Tom, you had tweeted out yesterday as well some of the connections that have been made outside of MLS if he were to leave. And remember, he hasn't played a game at all this year with RSL. He has played once in Open Cup play and once in MLS Next Pro, has not played in MLS. So it's been a bizarre scenario. He's still just 20 or 21 years old. He's obviously highly touted. The battle between the U.S. and Mexico to get him the run to the Western Conference Finals last year, he was the face of. But this is a really interesting move. I think it makes sense for DC. They kind of have the opening, but also time to waste, I guess you could call it. But this is a unique one.
Yeah, so this kind of makes sense on both ends. Look, David Ochoa is out of contract at the end of the season. Contract talks with Real Salt Lake have not been fruitful for a while. There's been some issues behind the scenes. He hasn't been training with the team. He hasn't started a game in MLS this year. He kind of lost his starting spot, didn't get it back. And again, between him and the club, things have not been great. There are a lot of teams saying, like Mexico, some in Europe, that would be interested in signing a 21-year-old international goalkeeper on a free when his contract is out. Yeah, like you were saying, there's a little bit of allocation money coming right now from DC to RSL. They get RSL will get more if he re-signs with DC United, and they'll keep a sell-on percentage if he re-signs with DC United. But the assumption, at least from the outside for me, is that he's going to be at least the chance or presumed starter at DC United with Bill Hamid out for a few months.
All right, so those are two huge rumors coming out. Tom, you've been rolling them out. The oven's been on. You just keep popping them out and get people back in the storefront. You want to hit us with a couple of the top bullets you feel from this week?
Yeah, let's do it. So Minnesota United are in talks to sign one-time U.S. Youth International Jonathan Gonzalez, now Mexico International, from CF Monterrey. Nothing is close or imminent there, but he'd be helpful in terms of their midfield. The New York Red Bulls are still actively chasing a striker in the Dutch second tier called Dylan Venti. It's going to be a little bit difficult to get over the line because the Dutch club don't have an incentive to get this done before the MLS transfer window closes, because they could kind of wait and hope that maybe a better offer comes from Europe, which doesn't close for another month. But still, the Red Bulls are still looking at him there. Matthew Hoppe is subject of a transfer offer from Middlesbrough in the England Championship. Sunderland also want him. The San Jose Earthquakes have his discovery rights in MLS. They made an offer that was rejected in the spring. Atlanta United really, really wanted to sign him. They had Chief Scout Jonathan Spector out there to scout Hoppe in some of the games that he wasn't playing. Good for him to get to Mallorca for a little work trip. Some other things. Chris Richards officially signed for Crystal Palace this week, which means FC Dallas get 35% of that transfer fee. I had an interview with technical director Andre Zanota, who he said how proud the club are and why they are always going to keep sell-on percentages in every single transfer is because they believe in these homegrown guys. They still have a percentage of Carlos Guerrero, who's still at FC Augsburg, so they might get cashed in there, Ricardo Pepi, all these players. So again, Dallas kind of benefit from a transfer for Chris Richards, which I think the fee was about $1 million originally. They'll get, I think, at least $5 million from the sell-on fee here, so they really kind of delay the gratification here. Charlotte and Sporting Kansas City were among the MLS teams that really tried to sign Gianluca Busio. He had a relegation release clause from Venezia, but Venezia are signing him to a new contract. He's close to agreeing or close to signing, whatever the phrasing is there. But again, Charlotte and Kansas City were trying to sign him. The Portland Timbers, they just announced this, but I had reported this, that they signed Colombian youth international right back Juan David Mascara. He's 19 years old. He's played for Independiente Medellin. He almost has 60 appearances, and he's so kind of highly thought of. Champions League semi-finalist Villarreal tried to hijack this deal late, but Portland got it done for a fee of $1.9 million. And with Cecilio Dominguez leaving Austin FC on a mutual contract termination, they open a DP spot, and a very highly reported move for Emmanuel Rigoni, gosh, I think I'm saying that right, from Sao Paulo for a reported $4 million fee. Chris Bills of the Striker is reporting that it's 99% done. There's a billion people in South America reporting about this, so kind of wait and see. Michael, you're the Austin FC guy. What do we got here?
It looks like Bills is the Austin FC guy on this one, DMing every journalist. Just kidding. This is something that, as much as I would like to say I have intel on, if we were doing the show tomorrow, I'd probably have more intel on, because we usually get everything the day before the game. But what I can tell you is that the Cecilio Dominguez just relationship with the club and that era, rightfully so, is closed. And it provides clarity for both player and club, for both parties to move forward. When
third
that happens,
potentially for Rigoni too, clarity for him.
Yeah. Well, when that happens, it creates space for a player to come in or more players to come in. And this is an Austin FC team that has been just working miracles, playing down without a DP. And Alex Ring is a DP, by legality, but when we think of designated players that come into Major League Soccer, Alex Ring is a functioning DP, and he's had a solid season playing at defensive mid, which I'm going to give him a shout out later when we talk about D mids. But I regress. This team needs balance, and wide areas, I think, is where balance is most needed, and depth. Now there's competition. Competition is what's really just they've been an example of. Look at how many different players have stepped up. How many different players have stepped up in terms of the score sheet? I think it's 11 or 12 different players, with Washington Caruso announcing himself with the bicycle kick assist. If you haven't seen it, go on ESPN Plus and watch it again, or MLSsoccer.com. It should be at the top handle for most insane bicycle kick assist of 2022. Total plug for Washington Caruso, because I'm high on this kid. This kid is going to take some time to adjust, but he's got something called pace. And pace in Major League Soccer is a big threat. He's direct. He can go left. He can go right. I think they're going to need something of that nature on the right-hand side. I could see Caruso and Diego Fagundes battling it out at the left wing position. And Ethan Finley and Owen Wolf have been taking time to see who's going to get that spot. I could see now coming a player, whether it's Rigoni or someone else, coming in to settle that position and call it their own. I also think at the outside back positions, there needs to be more depth. Hector Jimenez gone down with an injury, and right now they're a bit thin. John Gallagher, he shifted to the right back position in that Red Bull game. John Kolmanich has kind of been out in the cold. He just came back in the fold when they played Houston Dynamo FC, and I thought he had a very good game. The left back, you know, was a European international, has international caps to his name, youth caps to his name, and now there's competition brewing there. So on the flanks is where I think they need to reinforce things, and you know, it's been a fun season to call games, and now is the business portion of Major League Soccer. So we'll see what happens at the close of the transfer window.
All these rumors, all these moves, every team looking for an impact player who can help change their season. We have our fast, reliable, secure D-Mid of the month presented by AT&T 5G, and he was an impact signing this year. Designated player signing for FC Cincinnati, Obinna Woboto. Charlie, he comes in mid-season. FC Cincinnati's been dying for a player at this position since they joined MLS. What has stood out to you? What has impressed you from him so far?
What's impressed me so much about Obinna Woboto is the distance that he covers in the midfield and the intensity in which he covers that distance. He's a tough tackler, 27 tackles. He leads the team in tackles, and he's only been, you know, here for a half a season. 85% of his passes are completed. So not only does he win the ball, he connects passes. He's box to box. He gives FC Cincinnati that bite that they needed. Now, not only does he win the ball, he also is great at finding Lucho Acosta and finding him in those gaps, in those spaces. Lucho's lighting it up. 6 goals, 10 assists. But without Woboto, this does not work. He is that conduit between the back line and the attackers, because they needed someone to fill that space, to fill that void. Because let's be honest, Lucho Acosta is not really going to be winning balls and winning tackles in the midfield. But when you have somebody who you can rely on, that changes the dynamic of this group. So that he has elevated FC Cincinnati to another level.
He is pretty much top five in every big category you want defensive midfielder to be in per game. Obviously, he has played less games than most people, but tackles attempted, tackles won, passing percentages, all those things. He sits top five. He has been a home run off the bat. He is hoping to keep FC Cincinnati in the playoff race, which takes us to this weekend. A big weekend of MLS action. It gets started early. Friday night, 11 p.m. Eastern time on FS1, LAFC hosting Seattle Sounders. This could be Gareth Bale's first game as a starter. Chicho Arango continues to push for his spot or not, with the Luis Suarez news coming out yesterday that he will go to Nacional and will not be coming to Major League Soccer right now. It turned out the Sounders were one of the teams that went out and tried to sign him. They were the ones who had his discovery rights. Of course, he is longtime friends with Nico Ladero. And like the Josie de Liga Mexico, we've made that rumor up and transfer up a million times. Turns out real people try and do it as well, sometimes as well. So that's the huge game on Friday night, a full slate of games on Saturday, and it starts at 3 p.m. Eastern time with the two hottest teams in Major League Soccer facing off. Minnesota United, who are 5-0-1 in their last six games. They won on the road in Houston without Emmanuel Reynoso last weekend, who has been the hottest player alone in MLS. They host the Portland Timbers, who are on 7 unbeaten right now and have flown up the Western Conference standings and currently sit in a playoff spot for the first time in quite a while, and they look to solidify that a little bit more. And as Tom said, with a new right back in tow, which could be a huge help for them. So some big games there, some big ESPN Plus games.
Hold on. What? I'm always the first to come hard at Minnesota. Always. That oh, everyone knows that. And shout out to my guy Wes in Minnesota. What I will say is they have taken a turn. And a turn for the better, because this is a group we always knew they had talent, but it was never really put. It felt like the pieces were out of sorts. It was never perfect symmetry within this group. I would say after that loss to Miami on June 25th, and they win away on the road at Galaxy, that this group has come alive, and it's behind Emmanuel Reynoso, your best player. So he's always getting on the ball. He can make the hard things look easy. He can dribble out of pressure. He's got the flair, but he didn't necessarily get the goals and the assists. He's banging them in now for fun. That's the game changer. So he went from, yeah, he's super talented, he's an all-star, to, oh no, he's super talented, he's an all-star, he's winning us games, and he's got to be in that MVP conversation because he is a difference maker. Without him, we can't win, although they proved in Houston they could get it done. But over the course of the season, you need Reynoso to be producing, not only being a great playmaker and a facilitator, but also producing and getting on the end of balls in the box. So I love this. Minnesota, you deserve a ton of credit. I'll also say Inchi, shout out to Inchi, because my man has got this club playing again. They look motivated. This comes from the coaching staff. This comes from them saying, hey, it's time to look in the mirror. This is what's going to get us over the top. These are our strengths. Let's play to our strengths. And I'm going to put guys in the right position to succeed. So I'm the first one to put my hand up and say, job well done, but keep it going. Stay consistent.
Charlie, don't worry. I've got good news for you. August 10th, the MLS All-Star Game presented by Target. We will be in Minnesota for you to lavish them with all of their praise in person. We at Extra Time will be hosting a live show 7 p.m. Local time on Sunday night at Blackheart. You shouted out Wes already alongside the stadium. There'll be a free drink for fans who get there early, and you can come hang out with us and talk MLS. And don't worry, Mabel Reynoso knows it's all-star time. I'm hearing he's in training with new dyed hair. He went bleached.
Whoa.
That's when the stars show.
This is a great opportunity.
15
guys.
More minutes. 15 more minutes now.
We got an incredible restaurant out there that we did not know about called Owamni.
Don't say okay.
Well, I was told about. So if anybody from Minnesota has the hookup, we're trying
this
to go out
shameless.
There and let us know.
This is shameless.
Charlie texted, we should go here.
Get out of the chat. Honor, stop it.
Minnesota, let's go. God.
Charlie texted, we should go here yesterday, and I said, you should have sent that text 5.5 months ago. It's the most popular restaurant. But look, Charlie, I knew Charlie had connections. I just didn't realize they were on this show right now. I appreciate
the connections too.
All of you have brought me. Michael
you guys
Ahud,
are gross.
Tom Bogert,
you guys are gross.
Charlie Davies. He's on the Vancouver train after they win a title. He's on the Minnesota game after they win 5-0.
And when he wants reservations.
That's hilarious.
I'm not on the Vancouver train. Let's get that straight.
This is just in their own kit. He's still throwing.
Oh, man. In their kit. In their kit. You know what? Vanny's going to... We need to get Vanny on the show. Say it to Vanny's face.
We need to swap jerseys.
Say it to Vanny's
face. This is Charlie Post-Panenka doing flip, finger gun, and the stanky leg all at one time. Thank you, of course, to Anders for trying to keep any of this on the rails. And thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.